Well, a problem we don't think about in lockdowns is that they're very nationalistic. That if we lock down our economy, then it hits our economy. But it also means we are not buying stuff. We're not trading with weaker economies. We are not just destroying our own jobs. We're destroying the jobs of all those that in the poorer parts of the world that export to us. That seemed to me to be a reasonable point.
Really important point by Professor Gupta. I want to say it again. We in the World Health Organization do not advocate lockdowns as a primary means of control of this virus.
Wall Street and biotechnology companies have been very excited about this idea. And what essentially it is trying to pack the cells in the body in order to make them into drug factories.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
November 24th, 2020. Thank you for joining me today. Going to be actually quite a short show in general, not just in compared to what we normally do, but in general. I'm going to be talking about the 2020 election discussion to begin today, but more in particular about the transition funds and what just took place. Now, this is actually one of the moments I was telling you about, where this is an important discussion, regardless of the two-party illusion and the discussions around the election. Because this is something that is being heatedly debated, despite being pretty clear. And not what the arguments are on either side, because those are always convoluted in the two-party illusion, but what actually just took place is very clear. And I'm going to go through exactly what it means and why it happened, and then go on either sides of the conversation. And I'm going to use that to bolster the things we're always talking about and show you that it's only the two-party illusion and people's unwillingness to consider all sides of the story within that two-party illusion that we have these kind of issues. Normally, I wouldn't even dive into these. I mean, sometimes I do. Like, this is an example where it makes sense for the larger picture. But in a general sense, we just need to see how this is. People are deceiving themselves by acting like they already know what other people think, by assuming they know what their intentions are, which is exactly what the government, the mainstream media do to us in a general sense today, which is exactly why they're doing it too, even though they don't realize they're part of that, you know, circle of misinformation. But we're going to talk about the transition funds that were released from Trump's administration by the GSA for Biden, which seems to suggest going in the direction of Biden being president, but it's not necessarily what's happening. We're going to get into that. We're also going to talk about a couple of things after that in regard to lockdowns, a great video that James Corbett just did that you really need to watch, and a couple other points in regard to immunity passports and some other COVID-19 related issues. Because this is just an ongoing continuation on this show of just all the things that are being taken from you and all the rights that are being abused and all the things that are happening without you being aware of it. You know, it's just an ongoing masks, vaccines, lockdowns, manipulation story. You know, it's just what's frustrating. And I'm glad I remember this too. Two things, actually, the intro, but also the fact that I know that I've really stopped covering a lot of the foreign policy, and that's not by choice. There's just so much happening. Now, Robert Inlakesh is doing a great job covering some of these foreign policy topics, but I don't want you to think that I'm no longer going to be covering these things. It's very, very important to me. And on that note, the reason I'm bringing this up is because whether tomorrow or the next day, I'm going to try to do an only foreign policy show. I also have a Rockfin exclusive show that's going to be once a week, you know, kind of testing the waters in that field, starting, I believe, this week, later in this week. And it might even be that foreign policy show. We'll have to see how that plans out. But that will be coming. Now, I again used that intro that I didn't mean to use, and I'm not sure I keep accidentally using that. But it just reminded me to note it, to point out that the reason I made that clip for the intro was because Whitney Webb was working on something that we were going to be doing. Now she is taking a little bit of time off. She's doing okay. There's just you know, personal reasons. She's going to be taking some time to herself, which she obviously deserves. Just knocking it out of the park with all the work she's doing, so she deserves that time definitely. But I want to let you know that stuff isn't just put away. We will be getting to it as with so many other topics. Now let's jump right in to the important discussion that is OxyContin maker Purdue Pharma pleads guilty in criminal case. Now, I'm not starting right away with that, but this is important for you to see to set the tone for not just where this administration is, or the next one will be, or the one before that was, or the reality that this is an ongoing corruption issue that's always here, regardless of Democrat or Republican or whatever else you want to talk about. Now, this is important because it shows you that, it, again, across multiple administrations, that these same people have gotten away with one of the most flagrant, and I mean, like, on its face, obvious corruption. I mean, you could call this corruption, but you could almost call this organized crime. I mean, this is a really incredible story that, I mean, more people die from opioid abuse and specifically because of this scenario that was created by them than most other things we deal with in this country. But what I want you to understand more than anything is that this is the, I guess, the conclusion to this story. And what it shows you, one, is that they were guilty, except that was something that was fake news that we weren't supposed to talk. Remember, we were covering the story for years. And it was always, no, it's not that company, or it's not this group, or it's not the government, it's MS-13, or it's this or that, or it's some other story, not the government's fault, or not the companies that they work with or lobby them on behalf of their pharmaceutical companies or so on. Except now we're seeing that that was all a lie. All this time trying to sidestep into some other responsibility, this is just one of them. But this shows you that they are admitting not only that they made this worse, that they benefited, wildly profited off the death of your family members and whatever else happened as a regard to their willing, their knowing this was happening, willing to go forward with these policies. But on top of all of that, it just shows you that the government was allowing it to continue because this is something that they were involved in. You have to understand how many people have lobbying ties or tie direct on the board of directors or these the revolving door of our political process. Big Pharma is the largest advertiser for all of mainstream media. Do we not realize why this never got caught? I argue the only reason right now this is coming out is because they argue that nobody will talk about it. Probably that nobody will even see it because we're consumed with all the other things, not only COVID-19, but the election. And then it gets even worse when you find out that they are not actually being held legally accountable. And they're getting, you know, just a slap on the wrist, you know, a few million dollars, no big deal. You know, what do they make billions of dollars a year? But sure, let's billions of dollars a year, but sure, let's give them, you know, a couple hundred million dollar fine. Maybe that'll teach them. It's just like Wells Fargo, the same thing we're always pointing out, that this is a slap on the wrist. And these companies include this, as I believe Caitlin Johnstone first pointed out, as a cost of doing business. They know that they could have to pay these fines to make it look like they're being held accountable, so they factor that in. They make billions of dollars and they pay $200 million. And they go, oh, we got caught. We'll never do that again. And then they just keep doing it because that's part of the business. Now, that's not because yes, I believe this makes them bad people. I believe this makes them criminals. But that's not, you have to understand that within a system, a process that's been built by corrupt governments, that allow companies, which they dance in and out of, to continue to break the rules as they see fit, is it necessarily wrong for a company to take advantage of all the rules that were set so they could cheat? I mean, yes, it is, but you can understand that there's a line there where it's not the company necessarily, but the government and the practices and the laws that have been created to allow the situation to continue. This is why the point about Trump using the tax laws because they were there, you know, yeah, it's not necessarily his fault, and you understand why they would be used from a business perspective, but it also doesn't make him a good person in that one regard. You know my opinions about all this. I don't always need to equivocate and give you guys all the sides because there's always somebody out there that just can't stand what I'm saying. But this getting into the point shows you all the things we're talking about, and it's going to bother you. OxyContin maker Purdue Pharma pleads guilty in criminal case. Guilty. Purdue Pharma says its guilty plea over its role in the opioid crisis is, quote, an essential step to preserve billions of dollars. Right. So it's about saving their money. Doesn't that just make perfect sense? And I'll show you what they mean. Purdue Pharma pleaded guilty Tuesday to three criminal charges, formally taking responsibility for its part in the opioid epidemic that it has contributed to hundreds of thousands of deaths, but also angering critics who want to see individuals held accountable. Yeah, why would they, what's up with that? Why are you upset? Why would you ever want a company that created this much death and suffering to be held accountable? Whoever wants something like that? The fact that this can even be taking place, Or the examples we pointed out, whether it's big Wells Fargo or in the military, or basically, or look at 2008 as a grand example of multiple companies. What did one person go to jail? And there's so many people that were so obviously involved who shorted things they were involved with taking care of, or obviously chose to play it in the way that benefited them and allowed people to suffer. Nobody got held accountable for that. It just happened again because of COVID. What's $6+ trillion bailout? That's way bigger than 2008. But sure, who cares because COVID? It's the same thing here. These people are walking away with, I mean, I would even call it a slap on the wrist. In a virtual hearing with a federal judge in Newark, New Jersey, they didn't even have to go to court. There's not even a press gaggle out there going, look at them, let's take pick, nothing. This is almost like it didn't happen other than them reporting on it. The OxyContin maker admitted impeding the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration's efforts to combat the addiction crisis. So understand, even that alone, the fact that they admitted that they took action to stop that investigation, that's a crime. That's not a fine slap on the wrist. That's a crime. You go to jail. Right? If you try to impede in a federal investigation, do you think they'll come and give you a $100 fine? No. As an average Joe, you'll go to jail. But see, when you're in the elitist circles and make a lot of money for the government, well, we just put that aside and we act like you're doing good and this is just a one side step, that one bad step. So we're going to make sure you can continue. You know, it's like the pharma version of too big to fail. Purdue acknowledged that it had not maintained an effective program to prevent prescription drugs from being diverted to the black market, even though it had told the DEA it had such a program. So now it impeded the investigation. It also lied to the DEA about a program that it had, that it told them it had, so it would stop the problem. But you know why they didn't want to stop the problem? And this is on record, because they were making money. They openly said on record, caught more than once, saying that this is a boon. Not only do we need to keep this going, we need to take advantage of it. And that's why Narcan got involved and all these different products that were about not stopping the problem, but making money in different ways off the problem. And we're still there, by the way. That never went away. And this is what's happening. This is how much they care about your health. And that it provided misleading information to the agency as a way to boost company manufacturing quotas. So they not only lied about the program, but they made the fake program and the misleading information in a way that it boosted their own. I mean, it's the profiteering is just sickening. It also admitted paying doctors through a speaking program to induce them to write more prescriptions for its painkillers. Most of this is not new, actually. I reported on almost all of this stuff back when it was like fake news. We're not going to talk about that. Remember what do they call it? The quiet epidemic after like 8 years of this ongoing and all the independent media screaming about it happening. Oh, now we're going to act like it only just came into our view. They were writing prescriptions and paying doctors to increase those, which means that plenty of doctors were, oh, dare I say it, breaking the law. Can you believe that? There were doctors that were willing to take money in order to do something that went against their Hippocratic oath. Oh my gosh. Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Let's reflect on what an important thing that is. Because I thought, according to the current status today, that if you're a doctor or a scientist, that, you know, you're beyond reproach, especially if you go on the mainstream media. But I mean, being facetious aside, guys, the reality is that doctors are people. Scientists are people. Whether you're an expert, a Nobel laureate, whatever you want to, it doesn't matter. People are people. And they, for whatever reasons, whether through pressure, through being threatened, or just because they want to make money, or just because they feel like lying that day, can be dishonest. So when we're in this position where you have doctors being trotted out who say this or that about masks or lockdowns or whatever, and people are blindly taking it at face value because that aligns with what the narrative is, and then we go, well, here's reasons why they shouldn't, this and that, you know, questionable. You can't even think about that today. Beyond reproach. How dare you suggest that they would do something that would violate them? It's people. Just like we're seeing here, these doctors did this to make money, knowing that they were hurting people. At the very least, potentially causing people harm. It says, and it admitted paying an electronic medical record company to send doctors information on patients that encouraged them to prescribe opioids. This is in the midst of a huge epidemic that they were actually not only paying people to prescribe it, but then getting inside the records and paying electronic medical records companies to push that even further. That is sinister. It says the deal includes $8.3 billion in penalties and forfeitures. Oh, well, first, that sounds like a lot of money. But understand, $8.3 billion, first of all, even that is not enough. First of all, it should be criminal charges. But even then, 8.3 is still not enough. But then it gets better. It says, but the company is on the hook for a direct payment to the federal government of only a fraction of that. So on the surface, if and when anybody actually pays attention to this story, because you won't hear this on the mainstream channels that are babbling about COVID-19 and whatever else, you'll hear $8.3 billion. But you won't find out that it's only $225 million. That's it. So Purdue Pharma can lie to the FDA, lie to the DEA, manipulate government tracking information on pharmaceuticals, can actually pay doctors to lie to their patients, can go on year after year after year knowing they're hurting people, acting like they don't know what's going on as the government talks about the opioid crisis and they go, oh, we don't know, it wasn't us. And they lie and they lie and they continue to kill people, 70, 80, 100,000 people a year. And they give them a $225 fine. $1 million fine. Might as well be $225 in regard to their wealth. Members of the wealthy Sackler family who own the company have also agreed to pay $225 million to the federal government to settle claims. No criminal charges have been filed. That is the most important part. It says that though the deal leaves open the possibility. You know why that will never happen unless we make it happen? Is because of this. Paying money to the government. Well, of course, we'll see. The problem is the government is the reason this is happening. So they're making money because they allowed the problem. And we're pretending like giving money to the government is a solution. Like we're going to pretend that government, that money's that's just going to immediately go to the people that need it. That's the most ridiculously naive thing I've ever heard. How is all that money going for people for COVID? My family still hasn't gotten their COVID check. It's ridiculous. We're in a position where people are right now, $6 trillion have gone out to businesses that are already laying people off and have been throughout the whole process. So that didn't work. All you did was save their company and not the people that they employ, which was the whole point of doing it, as opposed to helping the individual small businesses, which are all shut down now. This is ridiculous. You're going to give money to the government and act like that is a win. You're paying the criminals. Your money, you're basically just having partners change hands of the money. That's an analogy. It's not exactly apt, but that's what we're talking about here. No criminal charges have been filed. The people are not going to jail. They're not even being charged with a crime. $225 million is the only thing changing hands. But it says, having our plea accepted in federal court and taking responsibility for past misconduct is an essential step to preserve billions of dollars in value for the settlement it is pursuing through bankruptcy court. Right. So we're concerned about their bankruptcy settlement money? After they just admitted to killing hundreds of thousands of people over multiple years? Are you serious? I mean, this is absolutely disgusting. And that's not even balked at by the author. Look, this is in 2018, 67,367 people died, according to this. Which, you know, I don't trust government stats these days as far as I can throw them, or ever, really. But from 1999 to 2018, almost close to 500,000 people died from this. Right. So, and but we're okay with, whoa, hold on, right? We got to make sure that we can preserve their money from their bankruptcy off of a company that made all that money from robbing families of their lives. That's incredible. It says, we continue to work tirelessly to build additional support. Understand the underlying point here is that the company is more important. These people may have done bad things, but the company is about helping people with, you know, medicine. It's not medicine. These are drugs. They have more side effects than they do benefits. It says, we continue to work tirelessly to build additional support for a proposed bankruptcy settlement, which would direct the overwhelming majority of the settlement funds to state, local, and tribal governments for the purpose of abating the opioid crisis. And again, so the money will end up going into the hands of the government. Why doesn't that money directly, instantly go right down to all the people that were suffering? Why does it need to go through the government? Well, I'll tell you why. Because they will abuse the money just like they did here. It will not just trickle down to the people who need it. Even if it was $8 billion, even if it was just $200 million, you know how much that could do to help these families? Sure, some of it will probably be, you know, virtue signaled and put out there with a couple of families that get put on a news show one day and make it look like things are changing. But that's not what ultimately happens. That's not what ever happens. The government is just as guilty in this than the Zach Sackler family and everybody else involved with the pharma companies. And yet they're benefiting wildly from this situation. It's sort of how we all get locked down and our business is destroyed and they ruin your lives and then just take all your money and give it to their own companies, their own people. And that's what just happened. Purdue's plea to federal crimes provides only minor comfort for advocates who want to see harsher penalties. Right. You mean like actual criminal action against people who committed? I mean, this is at the very least manslaughter. Right. I mean, you arguably didn't intend. That's a whole other conversation. But even if you didn't, you continued on doing it. It's negligence, manslaughter. Purdue's plea to federal crimes provides only minor comfort to the people that lost family members. The ongoing drug overdose crisis, which appears to be worsening during the coronavirus pandemic. Again, so now it's actually just getting worse. It's one of the many things. Pretty much every problem we have is being exacerbated by the unjust lockdowns that are based on something that's not actually as dangerous as the lockdowns. Isn't that perfect? Which appears to be worsening during the coronavirus pandemic, has contributed to the deaths of more than 470,000 Americans over the past two decades, most of those from opioids, both legal and illicit. Because understand that this transferred over to heroin after things started changing and suddenly people started getting held accountable, at least at the pharmacy level, which is the stupidest thing possible, seeing as how they're not the one. We're talking about the companies, the ones pushing all of this. But then suddenly people were addicted to something and they didn't even realize it. Suddenly they're on the streets going after heroin and it's not, and they were prescribed it for a toothache or for back problems. Kids in high school. Cynthia Munger, whose son is in recovery from opioid addiction after being prescribed Oxycontin more than a decade ago, as a high school baseball player with a shoulder injury, is among the activists pushing for Purdue owners and company officials to be charged with crimes. I wonder why. But no, nothing, but apparently not. Just a few, and it doesn't seem like she's going to get any money for this. The document also described the company trying to supercharge opioid sales in 2013. I talked about that exact thing. As reaction to the overdose crisis was taking hold. So they heard that the overdose crisis was getting out of control, and they wrote to their inner company circles. This is documents that were leaked or discovered. I forget which way, but we covered it on the show. And inside their inner circles, they wrote to the individuals within their company that they need to, quote, supercharge opioid sales. After finding out that there was an overdose crisis, that was like, oh, great. We're doing well. Let's keep pushing it. Let's supercharge. And no one's going to jail. And they're getting $213 million in fines. That goes to the government that then gets used for more war and suppressive actions against you. Freedom. It's incredible. Now, I also want to point out that I did this great show on the great mask deception. I actually meant to say the great mask deception. It was a good show. How PCR tests create a COVID illusion and thinking for yourself is a threat. Now, it's 3 hours. I broke it up and I played the mask deception alone today. I'm going to play the PCR probably tomorrow for lack of time today. Interesting to see that even this show is on YouTube. It's almost 8,000 views. I can almost promise this will go away in some near future. 8,000, see? But the interesting point that I'm showing you this is for this. This is just Facebook Live. 7.4 thousand views. This is why we need to realize that one outlet these days is not how this is going to continue. YouTube, the idea of YouTube as it was, is dead. Frankly, I think YouTube is dead as an entity. But regardless, the point is that we're broadening out into more things, more platforms. And I don't even think Facebook and Twitter are the one. The point is that this is getting even larger than they realize. There's so many people so thirsty for truth and information. They're going to keep trying to suppress it. But just realize that we are reaching people, and it is very much making a difference. Now, to get to the Biden transition discussion, this is what was announced by the mainstream media. Trump administration officially authorizes Biden transition. And effectively, people lost their minds. Right? All the people on one side immediately said, hey, Trump's out, Biden's in, it's over. Which, by the way, this is how this reports, but that's, of course, the mainstream media obviously having their lean to it. Not that the headline is in any way incorrect. That's the interesting part about all this. It's absolutely correct. But it does not mean that Trump is over, that he's conceded, or that he stops fighting, or that necessarily he can't pull something off and have this change. But it very clearly suggests that he's least loosening the grip. And I think that that is something that people can't wrap their minds around on the other side, where they think that people are implying what this means, that, oh, it's, you know, that the statement's correct, but what you think it means is not correct. Well, it's not about what we think it means. It's a statement. So let's get into what this actually says or what this actually is. Now, first of all, let's understand this is a process. right? Where, and I'm going to get into the actual document where this comes from, the 1963 Transitional Presidential Transition Act, which shows you that this is about the president giving over power to the other president. But that's not what you want to hear when you're on the MAGA side of all this. And you right now you think that this is a move, which, you know, it may be, to, I guess, throw them off the trail or however you want to look at this. And I'm not trying to be facetious. The argument here is that this, on one side of it, this is for the better part of the country, right? This is for the what's best for the country, which I don't really understand. Because if Trump actually won, and it was stolen, which, by the way, they're very obviously was cheating, and it's obviously there every year, every single election. But if he was cheated, and Trump is going to win, which is what all of his supporters think, and it may happen, why then would he do this? Because it's not like this is beneficial to Americans in any way. In fact, this muddies the waters more because Trump is still in power. He's still the president. He's still the president until after January, right? So doing this now in the middle of all this doesn't give anything to anybody other than Biden and some credence to his argument that he is now about to become president, right? I know that Trump is saying in his tweets that this is because the same thing Biden was arguing, that this is, it's, you know, what's best for Americans. But the only reason Biden was arguing that is because they were saying Trump wasn't doing what he was supposed to, that he's dragging his feet on COVID actions and he's not doing things. He's going golfing and he's not trying to do what he's OK. So is Trump admitting that he's not doing anything? Obviously not. So then explain for me why doing this in any way is a beneficial move to Americans from the Trump supporting side. It's not, especially if you believe Biden is as bad as you believe he is. So I don't get the argument from that side. But that being said, fine. We can pretend that there's possibility that he's doing this because he thinks that it will, you know, help people. Maybe it's because he thinks it'll be less division when this happens. Honestly, I think it's kind of the opposite because this is really confusing for a lot of people. But let's just leave it at that. It's possible. But on the other side, this is taken, and I understand why, that this is Trump finally going, okay, I am relinquishing my resistance to this whole process and officially beginning the transition. But we'll go through the tweets and we'll go through the comments. This is what I put out when I saw this. And this is, of course, what made people just lose their minds, which honestly is actually why I did it, but not in the way that I expected. Because what I should have added was hashtag two-party illusion, which I usually do. But this is, for the podcast, I simply tweeted out the article, Trump administration officially authorizes Biden transition. And I say, meet the new boss. Same as the old boss. Which, by the way, is just a saying. I'm not implying that he is my boss or that I believe in either of them or that I think the process is legitimate. It's just a saying. And the point is that he is the same, that they're both the same, that it's all a bunch of talking points and differences. At the end of the day, the policy goes the same direction. That's why I said that. And of course, on either side, they couldn't stand that, which is why I'm just so popular, right? Because I'm obviously ostracizing all of the people still believing in one side of the two-party paradigm. But I'm really hoping, at the expense of that popularity, that they can see the truth, that they can finally break past this. That's what I'm actually hoping that the MAGA side can see here, if Biden does officially win, that they can see that that was not what they were all built up to believe was going to happen. And at the end of the day, we have to attack the full system if we want any kind of actual change. And no, I don't mean attack in a violent way. But at the end of the day, we need to continue to strike at the root of this whole problem, not just one of the arms, right? That's what they get you doing. So hopefully we can begin to see that. Because I said this before, I mean this. I really believe that most of these people that believe in Trump, they actually have their hearts in the right places. They believe in the Constitution, a lot of these people, and they really do want to see the good for this country and the people of this country, which is what it's really about. So hopefully they can get past that. But I said this for the obvious reason. The two-party illusion is what we need to see. And if Biden's stepping in, if this is what's happening, and it's just going to continue in the same way. But of course, what Trump had to say, kind of, at least at first, made it quite confusing. He said, I want to thank Emily Murphy at the GSA for her steadfast dedication and loyalty to our country. She has been harassed, threatened, and abused. And I do not want to see this happen to her, her family, or other employees of GSA. So the argument, at least in the tweet, is that one of the reasons is because, well, she's being threatened. So I don't want that to continue. And that's a fair argument. That's a fair statement. Our case strongly continues. We will keep up the good fight. Well, okay, so right off the bat, he's clearly saying that he's still fighting to prove that he won. Right? So it's... Now, let me just insert this right away. My point, my opinion in this is that what happened with this transition fund being released historically very clearly does mean that the other person thinks they lost. That's not what Trump seems to think or say, and that matters. So the media, as always, is representing it the way that they want it to be, not necessarily what the truth is. right? But that doesn't mean that Trump's action doesn't imply that, I'll get into it in a minute, but I want it to be clear that Trump does not say or think that what he did is implying that he conceded or that he is giving up the fight. It says, and I believe we will prevail. Pretty clear. Nevertheless, in the best interest of our country, I am recommending that Emily and her team do what needs to be done with regard to initial protocols and have told my team to do the same. Right. So, which is exactly what we're talking about. And I don't get how in any way that's in the best interest of the country. You could argue it's in the best interest of Emily and her family. But to do this confuses and basically just takes taxpayer funds, gives it to Biden's team for the beginning of the transition and the processes and within all that. And you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff that in no way is beneficial to this country if people believe Trump won or even if they believe Biden won. It doesn't do anything until actual things begin to happen. So that's what I find so confusing about this process. I mean, my gut tells me, I've said this from the beginning, that it doesn't really feel like Donald Trump was actually invested with trying to win or fight against this. I know that's not how a lot of his supporters feel, and I'm obviously could be wrong. But when you really look into all of this, there's so much more that I feel like he should have done and said. And every single aspect they really dove into and tried to fight against, like Pennsylvania and different locations, none of them would have amounted to the overturning of the election. It would have just amounted to, look, there's fraud, which, by the way, I've said every single election for years, because it is. It's always there. Dead people voting, voters actually committing fraud, as well as voting machine fraud, as well as general election fraud, where people are cheating from political positions. I mean, it is everywhere every year. The voting machines is the most obvious point that I've brought up a million times. So when we see something like this, it might just mean that this is him actually relinquishing this process and continuing to step back while continuing to let his followers think he's fighting the other way about, you know, the other side. Right? Or I'm completely wrong, and he's doing this as a secret move to keep people thinking that he's conceding when all of the big information is about to come out. Now, that could very well happen. But understand that we have not seen anything at all about what is supposed to be coming out. Not that there hasn't been cheating. I'll repeat again. It's obvious. But in regard to the bombshell information that people like Sidney Powell have been continuing to float, I haven't seen it yet. Doesn't mean it won't come. But he says here, what does GSA being allowed, and this is kind of his follow-up to people saying, which is, this is, I see why they put that at the bottom. I was going to laugh at that. It's about, he says Dominion in there. That's why they said, Dominion, put the claim at the bottom, fraud. But this is him following up because people obviously took that and said, well, he's conceding. Which, by the way, is exactly what they did in regard to the other comment, which he didn't concede in, right? The media they're deceitful, guys. Fox, CNN, they're deceitful. They are talking heads that do what they're told. They do not have the kind of morals and integrity that they constantly preach to us about. Because they lie to us constantly. And here, I do believe they're misrepresenting the situation again. What does the GSA being allowed to preliminarily work with the Dems have to do with continuing to pursue our... continuing to pursue our various cases on what will go down at the most corrupt election in American history. Now, that statement is true. There are separate things. Trump can actively continue to investigate this with his team and whoever else for as long as he wants. One does not have to do with the other, but it does when you're considering whether that affects the outcome of the election. Because giving money to the Dems to what? To begin their transition obviously implies that you don't think that's going to happen. And there's not any benefit there. So saying it's good for Americans does not actually make sense. Now, unless I'm missing something, unless there's some grand benefit that giving Biden funds from, you know, I would love to hear what the Trump supporters feel with that, why that's a benefit to the American people. That doesn't seem to make sense to me. He says, we are moving full speed ahead. We'll never concede to fake ballots and Dominion. So that's very clear. He just said he'll never concede, and yet they jump out and say, Trump's conceding, it's over. Because they're liars, because they're deceitful liars. And he finally says, remember, the GSA has been terrific, and Emily Murphy has done a great job, but the GSA does not determine who the next president of the United States will be. And he's right. Very, very correct. But here's where it gets a little more frustrating and convoluted. Now, let's read the actual document. Okay, this is, addressed to Biden, General Services Administration. And this is, again, from, you know, this is the group we were just referencing, the GSA. And this is the letter about that authorization of the transfer of funds. Now it says, as the administrator of the U.S. General Services Administration, I have the ability under the Presidential Transition Act of 1963, which is right here, we'll get to in a second, as amended, to make certain post-election resources and services available to assist in the event of a presidential transition. I take this role seriously, and because of recent developments involving legal challenges and certifications of election results, am transmitting this letter today to make those resources and services available to you. So, the resources and services in regard to beginning the transition of power. I don't know why that seems so confusing to people who think that doesn't mean at least a small relinquish on the idea that you lost or won. Right? If Trump says that's not what he's doing, well, then you have to take him at that because he's the one making these choices and how it affects his campaign. But from a just general nonpartisan standpoint, you have to admit that taking that step is pretty damn clear to the average people and thinking historically, right? So I just don't understand the two-party nonsense where both sides are so freaking certain about what they think is happening right now, and both of them are probably seemingly incorrect. It says, I have dedicated much of my adult life to public services, to service, and I have always strived to do what is right. Please know that I came to my decision independently based on the law and available facts. And this is interesting because this is what you're getting. This is a perfect example of how broken the two-party illusion is, both for the media aspect and just the average people. So one side of this, the Democrat side, whether media or just individuals, are reporting this. See, she said that she was never threatened. I was never directly or indirectly pressured by any executive branch official, including those who work at the White House or the GSA. And it says, and with regard to the substance of timing of my decision, period. Okay, so all the Dems are out there pushing that out. And without anything, any follow-up, without the second part of the statement. They're sending that out and going, see, she admitted that there was no threats. You're all lying, fake news. I've already seen three articles making that exact point. But she continues. She says, to be clear, I did not receive any direction to delay my determination. I did, however, receive threats online, by phone, and by mail directed at my safety, my family, my staff, and even my pets in an effort to coerce me into making this determination prematurely. Even in the face of thousands of threats, I always remain committed to upholding the law. Now, why would you leave that second part out? Well, because you want to misrepresent what was being said. Now, of course, on the other side of that, I'm seeing the Trump side only report the second half of that statement. Basically saying, I received threats online by phone, and that's it, leaving out the first part of it. Why would you do that? Because you want to misrepresent how this is being perceived. And this is what's so infuriating. You know, the people like us that are just trying to be objective and report the truth outside of a partisan perspective get attacked from both sides and the media. We're the only ones seemingly actually fighting for everybody's well-being collectively. Very frustrating. But so the point is, yes, she was threatened. So according to them, which I don't know there's any reason. I wouldn't balk at that as set for a second. I think that both sides would actively do both, in any sense, would do whatever they could if they thought it would end up giving them the election win or their guy, their savior. But it's interesting to see how that split up. But it says, contrary to media reports and insinuations, my decision was not made out of fear or favoritism. Instead, I strongly believe that the statute requires that the GSA administrator ascertain, not impose, the apparent president-elect. Okay, so that kind of, that seems to suggest exactly what I'm saying. Unfortunately, the statute provides no procedures or standards for this process. So I looked to precedent from prior elections, exactly, involving legal challenges in complete courts. GSA does not dictate the outcome of legal disputes and recounts. Right. So the idea is that she's holding off on this because of the legal issues in the air. Now, to a degree, I understand that. But if those things do not end, if the end result, whichever way they go, will not overturn the election, I don't really get it. If we're going to really argue that the election is so fraudulent that the whole thing needs to be redone, well, I am all for that. Because I think we need to use that moment to let us all acknowledge that it's always been that way. But that will never happen. Because, see, that's the illusion that people out there think that that's what Trump and them are doing. We're going to show the whole thing. We're going to bring it all down. If that really happens, like I say every time, and I've been saying for all the years Trump's been here, I will stand up and applaud and scream and kind of clap and say, he did it, I was wrong. But I've yet to do that because it hasn't happened. Every time we hear, this is what he's going to do. And I say, well, if he does it, I'll be happy. It doesn't happen. It's funny how that continues to happen, right? So here we are. And if that actually does happen, and we do show that the cheating and the machines and the you know, supranational companies that are involved with all these things are clearly involved with them manipulating our elections, and you know, then I will happily report that. But I really do not think that's what's going to end up happening. It says the GSA does not dictate the outcome of legal disputes, nor does it determine whether such proceedings are reasonable or justified. These are issues that the Constitution, federal laws, and state laws lead to the election certification process and decisions by courts of competent jurisdiction. I do, and by the way, it seems like as we are currently standing, it seems like the most of the legal aspects have been thrown out or turned down. Some are still ongoing. As I understand it, Pennsylvania just certified for Biden. All right, so I just don't really see how this plan plays out in the way that they're continuing to paint it, but I'm always open for different perspectives. It says, I do not think that an agency charged with improving federal procurement and property management should place itself above the constitutionally based election process. I strongly urge Congress to consider amendments to the act. As you know, the GSA administrator does not pick or certify the winner of a presidential election. Instead, the GSA administrator's role under the act is extremely narrow, to make resources and services available in connection with a presidential transition. Exactly. Which would imply the person transitioning into the president position is the person becoming the president. I mean, I think people are bending over backwards to make this not what it obviously is. But again, whether it's an obvious transition of power or not, if Trump is saying that he's not conceding because there's some big bombshell that's about to come out, well, why would we challenge that? Continue to say Trump states this and here's what Biden says. And then when the actual transition happens, well, then we can, well, nothing happened. I mean, there's no point in lying about what he's saying other than to continue to manipulate the perception of the public, which is literally the job of the mainstream media. This is as stated, because of recent developments involving legal challenges and certifications of election results, I determined that you may access the post-election resources and services described in Section 3 of the Act upon request. The actual winner of the presidential election will be determined by the electoral process detailed in the Constitution, which is currently happening. Section 7 of the Act and public law dated October 1st, 2020, which provides continuing appropriations until December 11th, makes 6,300,000 available to you to carry out the provisions of Section 3. Well, actually, I remember. Funny, I already went through that. And think about what $6 million can do for the families of this country right now. Right, so they need more money as opposed to just taking the money that they've already raised for the election and everything else they're doing. No, they need more of your money, but from the slush fund of the American government. Meanwhile, $6 million, if you can just hand it off to Biden for things that have nothing to do with what's currently happening, doesn't that also mean you can just hand off $6 million to people in need? Yeah, that'll never happen, though. We'll say we'll give you something. We'll give you a $1,000 check and then give $6 million of it to the big companies and say, we saved you. It's gross. And it says, in addition, $1 million is authorized pursuant to public law to provide appointee orientation sessions. Right. So to begin to set the table for the people that they'll bring. Does this sound like what happens to people that aren't yet decided to be president? I remind you that Section 6 of this act imposes reporting requirements on you as a condition for receiving services. If there's anything we can do to assist you, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So pretty clear that it seems that they're walking the line, as if this is not what's really happening, but yet this process seems to imply that. This is talking about the Transitional Act, 1963. The biggest change now is that the Biden transition team, according to this article, will be able to flood federal agencies with officials focused on preparing the way for his administration. Right. So explain for me again how that's beneficial to Americans. Now we have dueling officials with dueling money at the simultaneous, I mean, for a month now, like while we're dealing with all these problems and why people are fighting against legal, unjust, constitutional right challenging acts. I mean, this is the last thing that people need. It says they will have access to agency staff and briefing books assembled earlier this year. Now, as I understand it, Sputnik and CNN are reporting that Biden has also now been given access to the classified briefings. Why would any of this be happening if there wasn't some kind of difference of mindset here? It's really interesting. And the last point that I want to make on this is the original act. Now, there has been amendments in regard to this, but I just want to make it clear that what the in general opening of Section 3 she's referring to says, The president of the United States or the president's delegate may take such actions as the president determines necessary and appropriate to plan and coordinate activities by the executive branch of the federal government to facilitate an efficient transfer of power to a successor president. And then goes on to talk about the funding and all the different things. That's what Section 3 talks about. The preface in regard to the underlying points it makes is between the president and the successor president, right? The president-elect and the person who's currently there. That's pretty damn clear. So just understand that there's this whole balking at the idea that we don't understand what's going on because the headline states the fact is wildly ridiculous because we're staring at something that's historically pretty damn obvious. But as I pointed out, this is important to understand that this is the kind of breakdown, and this happens on both sides. As I said, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. And the person just responds, fake news. You're not paying genuine attention. Apparently, I'm not paying genuine attention for 18 hours a day. Yeah, sure. But fake news. Now, which exactly is fake news? Right? My opinion? Well, that can't be the case because my opinion is that they're the same. Is it Trump administration officially authorizes Biden transition? Well, yes. He's saying that's fake news. But it obviously happened. I just showed you. It clearly happened. Trump feels it's not the end of his efforts to fight, but it clearly happened. Trump did authorize Biden transition funds. That's very clear. So I said, first of all, it's a perspective, an opinion, not fake news. Second, it is sad to see that you still think, as of now, that I was the one not paying attention, even as things march forward exactly as I predicted, yet fought against with all I had. He said, the headline you posted is fake news. In the sense of being misleading. See, and this is exactly what the media is doing now in regard to how they censor. You post the box with what the box of masks says, and they censor you because, well, he's implying that this is what, well, no, we did, all I said was what the box said. So they're censoring you based on what they think your intentions are, even though it's a very factual statement. Welcome to that. Welcome to the MAGA supporter doing exactly what the mainstream is doing to us to censor. That's not a coincidence. The headline you posted is fake news in the sense of being misleading, not that it's wrong. He said, if you take it as face value, then you're not paying genuine attention, which I didn't say that I did, assuming what my opinion is. And none of what you talk about is unknown to people who think and research, clearly. Obviously, that's just ridiculous. This guy's clearly never watched any of my work, but I said, no, it's not, guy. Just because you take issue with the way they frame it, as I do, which he clearly didn't think, he assumed, based on what he thinks I'm trying to say, doesn't mean it's not happening, right? So if you take issue with the way you think they're framing, it doesn't mean that the statement of Trump's transition, of the Biden transition funds, doesn't mean, it's just, that's a fallacy. It's a logical fallacy. And what they're doing is acting like how you perceive it is what matters, not what it's actually saying. It says, just as you make fun of those blindly listen to mainstream media, you blindly listen to the way your sources frame it. All I am saying is that it's happening. It is. Get a grip. And I went on to add, I did not say or imply that Trump conceded, nor did I say or imply that his fight was over. I was not framing this in any way, simply pointing out that it happened, which it did. Now, saying this is separate. That is me saying that they're both the same person. Now, you could argue that that's me saying that he's in, but I didn't say that. Now, you can assume based on what that is. But see, this is the problem today, that everyone is assuming what other people think. And you know what? I do it sometimes, too. We all do it. Because the problem is right now, we are all being socially engineered to be a very certain way, whether we realize it or not, from your TV, from your social media, from the way that you have, you know, these reinforcing circles of, you know, I forget what they use the term, the reinforcements on social media. You know, they get you acting very specific ways. That's the problem. But of course, this was the outcome, as I found out by responding to this, that he blocked me based on the reality that I was stating my opinion. He said, we in the know. So again, you know, apparently thinking that he knows that he's in the know, which is just incredible. Know that the article is correct in quotes. How can it be correct in quotes while he's saying that it is correct? You see what I mean? Like, that's wild. That's the kind of mental equivocation, the mental gymnastics that blow me away. So is it correct or is it, quote, correct? That is implying that it's right, but what you think about it is wrong. He says, but your original quote was actually my comment. I didn't quote anything. Implies that you think it is literally correct and the deal is sealed. Exactly. So he wrongly, and that's not what I actually thought. But at the end of the day, he blocked me. And this is how it all boils down, is that people are willing to believe what they want to believe based on their preconceived opinions. Did Trump administration officially authorize Biden transition? Yes, very clearly. But yet it's fake news because we're saying that he's already the elect. But to the point, that is basically what it means. So it's not even a wrong assumption to make. But yet I am objective enough to look at what Trump had to say and then go, okay, well, wait a minute. Trump's not saying this was happening. So maybe there's more coming. And I'm obviously willing to consider that. But both, and I mean, I could have, there, I had an example of a mask art discussion just like that, sort of, where the lady was breaking down the mask points. I was going to do that one too, to give kind of a balance, but why do I have to do that? You guys all know my opinion. I'm tired of people stuck in the two-party paradigm going, you never talk about the other side, even though I always do. But the reality is it's very clearly on both sides. And you can break down the logical fallacies of these kind of things, right? Where you look at the Trump side of this and you clearly see these people that are, that, you know, that have similar opinions in regard to what I think about face masks or lockdowns or so on, but then think I'm a crazy shill because I don't think Trump is the savior. And vice versa, we have that happening the other way around. If I'm willing to consider that Trump is not the biggest villain on the planet, then I'm the worst shill. It's a problem. We all know it's a problem. It's getting really bad. But that's why we need to continue fighting for this stuff and waking people up. Now, the other part of this story is the fact that Trump's team just very clearly distanced themselves from Sidney Powell. Now, this is another aspect that I got the same kind of confrontation with, where I asked these people that support, I said, well, what happened with, oh, you're, stop watching mainstream media. And I'm like, well, first of all, I'm not watching mainstream media. I'm looking at this, which is a constitutional law attorney, senior legal advisor for the Trump team, who tweeted this out. So they immediately assumed that I saw this on mainstream media, and that's why I formed my opinion, because I read a headline. God, I wish people would not think that I'm doing what they're doing. I follow these people's accounts, and I listen to what they're saying, and I consider their opinions. This is the Trump team stating this very clearly. Trump campaign statement on legal team. Quote, Sidney Powell is practicing law on her own. She was a member of the legal team before that was said. She is not a member of the Trump legal team anymore. I said that. I'm just saying, because you understand it was one, that's how it was, and now it's not. She is also not a lawyer for the president and in his personal capacity. I mean, look, regardless of whether she was ever part of the legal team, this statement is clearly, I mean, this, what this is, or what this would be called by anybody nonpartisan, is distancing yourself. It's a distancing. They're saying, well, you know, she's over there and we're here. And it doesn't mean that they aren't still working together. It doesn't mean that they don't believe in what she's doing. It doesn't mean anything other than they want to make sure we know that she is not part of the Trump administration. That is distancing themselves. Regardless of how you see that or what you believe about the agenda, that is what that is. Simply saying that made people lose their minds when I'm having conversations about this. Oh, that's not what's happening. And I'm just, and of course, they're believing they know what's happening based on something where there's less information than most anything I can see today, because they trust other sources. You see how ridiculous that is? The point is here, guys, this is another indication that this is going the other direction. Sidney Powell was the one that came out with all these boisterous claims, these bombastic claims about Venezuela and China and them with their machines, even though those machines were used by people in the Clinton Global Initiative, in, you know, in foreign countries, yes, but also specifically here, as well as ties to a lot of the things we've already covered. But of course, it's Venezuela's fault, right? That doesn't fit into the narrative. But at the end of the day, now they're saying, well, we're not really along with that. And of course, the mainstream went way over the top and tried to theorize and make discussions about how, oh, this shows this and that, and they're doing exactly what they pretend we do, because they're a joke, because the mainstream media is dead. But looking at this, we need to realize that this is a potential indication that this, that they are giving up on this effort. Now, do I think that's what's happening? I'm not sure. I'm right in the middle right now. My opinion from the beginning was that it doesn't seem like what Trump is doing is what you would expect after the 4 years of just crazy tweeting and chaos, you know, all the things that were happening and in-your-face discussions, and suddenly it just does. Now, and look, I would argue that I totally get the point of saying, well, if we're really in a legal case here and they really do have a chance, well, yeah, that makes sense to be quiet about it. I said that from the beginning. That could be why he's not really being loud about this, but I'm just not, I don't have anything in front of me yet. I can't jump to conclusions based on hopeful and wishful thinking. So this does seem to indicate that they are distancing from Sidney Powell and that this is going in the other direction. It really does. As well as the fact that I just said they, Pennsylvania, certified the election results for Biden despite Trump legal challenges. Now, as this all marches forward, we need to see two very clear things. All of these actions, in a general sense, point to a slow relinquishing of the battle to keep, you know, to fight for his election and to claim that he won, a slow relinquishing of that battle, as well as the fact that Trump is stating very clearly that he's not giving up. Those two things, in my opinion, seem to be contradictory. But if he's stating that and continuing to say and claim that they have more evidence that's coming, there's no reason any honest reporter would continue to just ignore that and act like the other was the case, unless that's what you wanted, which means you're not a journalist. It means you're a partisan pundit who is stating what they want to be the reality. I mean, it should be clear by now that I don't like any of these people. I think Donald Trump is just as bad as Biden. Doesn't mean I'm willing to be dishonest about the way this is happening because I like one over the other, because that's dishonest. But Trump is saying, Trump says he will never concede. And that's what I want to be clear. He's stating that, which could also imply that he'll never, ever concede, regardless, whatever happens. So it's already over. He's just planning on never actually saying the words, however you want to take it. But I do think that there are things that are still happening. And I really do hope that we get more evidence coming out about the manipulation of these machines. Smartmatic, Dominion, ES&S, Heart Civic, all these companies are crazy corrupt. But as it says here, Sidney Powell, an attorney once affiliated with Trump's legal team but now acting independently, said she has a deluge of evidence that Dominion and other voting systems were exploited to swing the election, like every single year, saying she soon intends to file a lawsuit of epic proportions that will detail the evidence. Now, me saying that's not to say that's not important. It's important every single time it happens. I'm just simply pointing out the fact that I have evidence of this happening every single election. This builds on previous remarks she made claiming the proof she said that she was receiving, regarding election fraud was massive, and likened its eventual disclosure to releasing the Kraken, which I've already seen people report that, well, no, she already released the Kraken and it's all still coming. Or, you know, there's just, people are getting a bit desperate here because they've kind of hung their careers on the idea that this is all going to come down, the tribunals, and it's all going to happen right in the end. And, you know, hey, I hope we see some people held accountable. I just don't see any evidence, as I've said all 4 years, behind this or any of the other QAnon or discussions they float about these things coming to pass. But anybody out there should be hoping that criminals get held accountable. It's just silly to argue that that's not what we want because I hate Trump. That makes you a child. That's just so much of that today. But Dominion has repeatedly denied that its systems were compromised or used in a fraudulent manner. Of course they do. I mean, that's the dumbest. Why would you ask them? Well, you're willing to admit that your company is a problem? Obviously not. Their stock price would drop. But it says, meanwhile, while a joint statement put out by the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA, on behalf of a National Elections Infrastructure Coalition with links to Dominion through the company's membership in CISA's Election Infrastructure Sector Coordinating Council, called the November 3rd election the most secure in American history, which is just ridiculous. Trump later fired then-head of CISA, Christopher Krebs, claiming the joint statement was highly inaccurate and that there were massive improprieties and fraud. Now, the reality here, guys, is we need to realize that that guy and the entire thing was put into place by Donald Trump, which doesn't mean anything other than that's just an important fact when you understand that these things tend to get painted as, well, you know, Trump put these people in place. Trump actually signed into law CISA in itself. So when he fires Chris Krebs for doing that, you can't be like, well, it doesn't mean anybody couldn't be working with some other side against you. But it's usually because, oh, it's an Obama appointee or he's working with the Democrats or something like that. But that's not the case here. The Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency was established on November 16, 2018, when Donald Trump signed into law the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency Act of 2018. So it's interesting. But Trump will not give up. But I also want you to consider this video before we move on to the last part. It's so important to understand. This is not new. This has been going on as long as I've ever seen elections happening. And this article you're looking at right here is from October 2019. And it goes through all the companies. I went through this whole article in this video that I hope you'll watch. The market for voting machines is broken. And all these companies, in this case, ES&S in this article was one of the main focuses, because not only do they have broken machines that continually have problems, they sue people for trying to uncover those problems. They sue politicians for trying to remove them. They sue companies for trying to give, you know, trying to create contracts that are above their ability. So it's like, we're suing you to keep these broken machines in play while people have better equipment and better technology, and they get sued and they keep them in place. I mean, it's ridiculous. Brothers own two of the different companies, even though they look like they're different company. I mean, this is the most obviously corrupt situation. The moment we went into these voting machines, I swear these people were you know, rubbing their hands together. Oh, this is going to be great. We're going to be able to manipulate all this stuff. And we can clearly see that's what's happening. And before you jump on it, that is obviously a bipartisan thing happening on all sides of our corrupt, broken system. Always has been. So please take the time to watch this. It's only 29 minutes, and it goes into the history of these broken machines and how it's not just right now. And if Trump actually wanted to bring this all to light, he really could. He really, really could. If I can look this up online and talk about it in a show and just lay it all out for you, so can he. But he's not. Or maybe he will. We'll have to wait and see. If he does, I will cheer him on. I just really don't think it's going to happen. So as that all plays out, and as everybody argues about what this means, it's pretty obvious what it means. It's a step that was taken that usually leads to the beginning of the transition. Trump claims it's not. So again, we wait to see what happens. If the mainstream media could just get past its own hubris, maybe, maybe we could see some honest reporting. But nope, that won't happen because they're already paid off and controlled by the government. But, you know, one can hope. But continuing on to COVID-19. I really wanted, this is such a great video from James Corbett. Now, unfortunately, I'm playing it on YouTube, frustratingly enough, because for some reason, Odyssey was having a weird issue before I got started. 9 times out of 10, I mean, from my experience, Odyssey is a fantastic platform or library, whichever side of it you use. That being said, whatever was happening beforehand, it might have been on my end. Either way, I really wanted you to see this, so if we're going to have to grit our teeth and play it for you on YouTube, but important to watch this. Just the opening, anyway. This is called What No One Is Saying About the Lockdowns. Now, please watch this in its entirety, a very, very important video.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. In 2006, a 15-year-old high school student from Albuquerque, New Mexico, won third place in the Intel Science and Engineering Fair for her project on slowing the spread of an infectious pathogen during a pandemic emergency. Using a computer simulation that she developed with the help of her father, she argued that in order to slow the spread of the disease, governments should implement school shutdowns, keep kids at home, and enforce social distancing. Incredibly, that third place high school science fair project can be tied directly to the lockdown policies being implemented by governments around the world today. You see, that father that she developed her computer simulation with was no average doting dad, but a senior researcher at Sandia National Laboratories, who at that time was working on pandemic emergency response plans for the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. His proposal to implement school shutdowns and, if need be, workplace shutdowns in the event of a pandemic emergency was developed at least in part in response to his daughter's high school project. Now, those advocating for lockdowns have...
It looks like the screen was acting funny there. I'm not sure why, but I'll just play that last part again because that is unbelievable.
Homeland Security. His proposal to implement school shutdowns and, if need be, workplace shutdowns in the event of a pandemic emergency was developed at least in part in response to his daughter's high school project. Now, those advocating for lockdowns have seen the destruction and death that those policies have wrought this year, and we are living through that right now. Not only are people being deprived of their livelihoods and forced into grinding poverty as a direct result of these shutdowns, but now the undeniable truth is that if you are advocating for lockdowns, you are advocating for some portion of the population to be consigned to death. This is no longer debatable. It is even openly admitted, although months too late, by the World Health Organization.
I wanted to say it again.
Now, I wanted to actually play this in its entirety for you. Not, I mean, it's only like another 30 seconds, but I wanted to actually play this fully so you could hear it. I played the clip in the beginning. Take a listen.
Well, a problem we don't think about in lockdowns is that they're very nationalistic. That if we lock down our economy, then it hits our economy. But it also means we are not buying stuff. We're not trading with weaker economies. We are not just destroying our own jobs. We're destroying the jobs of all those that in the poorer parts of the world that export to us. That seemed to me to be a reasonable point.
Really important point by Professor Gupta. I want to say it again. We in the World Health Organization do not advocate lockdowns as a primary means of control of this virus. The only time we believe a lockdown is justified is to buy you time to reorganize, regroup, rebalance your resources, protect your health workers who are exhausted. But by and large, we'd rather not do it. Just look at what's happened to the tourism industry, for example, in the Caribbean or in the Pacific, because people aren't taking their holidays. Look what's happened to smallholder farmers all over the world because their markets have got dented. Look what's happening to poverty levels. It seems that we may well have a doubling of world poverty by next year. We may well have at least a doubling of child malnutrition because children are not getting meals at school and their parents in poor families are not able to afford it. This is a terrible, ghastly global catastrophe, actually. And so we really do appeal to all world leaders. Stop using lockdown as your primary control method. Develop better systems for doing it. Work together and learn from each other. But remember, lockdowns just have one consequence that you must never, ever belittle, and that is making poor people an awful lot poorer.
Indeed, and a rise in world poverty after years and years in which world poverty was falling and falling. And we've reversed almost a decade of progress going back in nine months.
Now, that's just incredible. Like the idea that world poverty had been going down and down and down, and suddenly with all that, just, you know, now it's all bad. Like, doesn't that seem to be the opposite? I mean, this whole thing is incredible. The idea that the high school aspect of this, where the girl could do a project from this kid, and that's what ends up, it's even listed on the actual study, or the idea that we're seeing a doubling in world poverty. I mean, think about the massive effects of that, a doubling of world poverty. We're talking tens of millions of people. We're talking a doubling of malnutrition. And we're really going to pretend that even the hypothetical amount of tens of thousands of deaths they're claiming are coming from this, even though we can't prove that based on all the caveats and the numbers, that's more important than the doubling of world poverty, a doubling of world malnutrition, all the continuing deaths and increase in problems we're seeing because of this? Yes, this is, as we told you from the beginning, the solution being worse than the problem. Exactly what he promised wouldn't happen, even though that was probably the plan from the very beginning. It's just incredible.
This is the point at which no doubt I'll be expected to produce the data to back up the non-controversial observation that lockdowns kill, even though that data will do precisely nothing to penetrate the consciousness of those who have already decided that they occupy the moral high ground for advocating locking billions of people around the globe as prisoners inside their own homes. But persevere I will. I'll point, for example, to the letter signed by hundreds of doctors calling the lockdowns themselves a mass casualty incident and exhorting politicians to end the shutdowns. I'll point to the research that shows that thousands of people will die because of delays to cancer surgery treatments as a result of the medical shutdowns. I'll point to the research.
Now, understand that these are not that's how many people will die that year from that. These are additional numbers. So because of the situation with COVID, they frame it like that. Because of COVID, no, because of the government actions around that thing, that many extra deaths in that scenario will happen. That's what he's saying.
Search of the Well-Being Trust showing that 75,000 Americans are expected to die deaths of despair, including alcohol and drug misuse and suicide this year alone as a result of the lockdowns.
Okay, so that's 75,000 alone. So are you adding these up? 75,000 here, 60,000 there, 75,000 there. I mean, we're way, way past what we are being told is happening because of this. These are articles in the mainstream, guys. Right? For all the people that are out there, fake news. What part are you actually quibbling about? It's incredible to see how obvious all of this is.
I'll point to the research of The Lancet showing that 265 million people are expected to be thrown into severe food insecurity as a result of these lockdowns. I will even point to the research showing 125,000 children are expected to die from malnutrition as a result of these lockdowns.
125,000 children in the world are expected to die. Now, that's an estimate. I mean, we know how wrong they tend to be with their estimates. But it does not change the fact that those are the people that are behind all of this to some degree. It may be an oversimplification, but ultimately government-related entities telling us that many people may die. Make sure that, okay, good. That many people may die, but not that year, on top of the normal, due to malnutrition. Children, 100 and something thousand, that alone is more than what we're talking. I mean, it's just incredible. We're not talking cases, because there are millions of cases in this based on a test that gives you false positives, as well as the antigen test that also now gives you false positives, and that's very clear. We're talking about the deaths, and this is what we're dealing with, the lockdown, the solution that the World Health Organization just said is not the answer, is killing lots of people, more than we're being told to be, or being supposedly dying because of COVID. Now ask yourself this, is the World Health Organization is saying that you shouldn't be doing these lockdowns? So the people out there that are saying we should, aren't they breaking the rules? I thought we weren't supposed to be able to challenge World Health Organization guidelines. Oh, yes, you're only not allowed to do that when the media is the one supporting it. I see. Because the people in that sphere attacked that individual when he came out and said that, except that they were bleeding about not challenging what they were saying. And he is a gentleman that's on the board that creates those guidelines. So what are we talking about? There are plenty of people out there, governments included, that are continuing to do the lockdowns as if they are the answer. And they just said they're not. And yet we're being censored for not following World Health Organization guidelines? Yes, this whole situation is that stupid. And it's that convoluted, and it's that... this is designed to make people uncomfortable and make people uncertain about what's going on.
But as I say, none of these deaths will matter to those who have already decided that they are right and virtuous for advocating locking vast swaths of the human population inside their own homes to starve to death in the name of slowing the spread of a disease that even the epidemiologists who have been wrong about everything this year tell us will kill less than 1% of the infected. Yes, slowing the spread, not stopping the spread. This was never about stopping a pandemic. Even the lockdown advocates never advocated that, but somehow that has been forgotten, and 15 days to flatten the curve has turned into a never-ending carte blanche for the biosecurity state to implement any number of draconian policies on its population, any number of policies on the checklist of the would-be dictator. Not only
I love James Corbett's work, and I meant to actually end that after the World Health Organization part, but he makes such excellent points. You know, I really hope you'll watch that full video. And if you haven't watched his work, I really hope that you'll take the time to dive into that work. Very important stuff there. Very important. Now, moving forward in this discussion, the same idea. It's incredible that we're in a position where people like James and myself, or anybody actually trying to tell you the truth about what's going on, are being deemed crazy conspiracy theorists. And then when, you know, real experts and medical professionals and highly respected people speak up and say what we're saying, they just get ignored. So they can continue pretending like we're a bunch of fringe weirdos, as opposed to having the backing of people like Lord Sumption, or, you know, Nobel laureates, or even, you know, I mean, on and on and on, the many people we've talked about. I mean, we just talked about Dr. Hodgkinson. These are highly respected people. And I mean, even in Dr. Hodgkinson's case, he is literally the expert in that position that should be speaking on that. And nobody wants to talk about what he said. How can you possibly pretend that is honest reporting? Title here, UK Supreme Court judge slams totalitarian COVID control freaks in government. This is a Supreme Court judge, and yet we're crazy. A British Supreme Court judge has slammed the UK as control freaks for attempting to control people's lives under the guise of COVID, and labeled it morally and constitutionally indefensible to defend what freedoms the public should, to define what freedoms the public should and should not have. Lord Sumption, who we've mentioned before, noted that the debate about whether to let us have a family Christmas perfectly sums up what is wrong with the government's handling of this crisis. I completely agree. And saying agreeing with Lord Sumption here is not to blindly and ubiquitously endorse everything he's ever done. It's about what he's saying here and that I agree with it. But it says here, Sumption proclaimed that the state is exercising an instance on coercing, an insistence, excuse me, on coercing the entire population. That is a UK Supreme Court judge saying it is morally and constitutionally indefensible in a country which is not yet a totalitarian state like China. Quote, the government has not earned our trust. Sooner or later, people will take back control of their lives and do the right thing, whatever ministers say. That is a UK Supreme Court judge basically saying people will revolt. And that's the right thing. I mean, guys, we have never seen a more clear position. I mean, we're going to continue to see this devolve and lines will be drawn. And it's not the bunch of YouTube fringe weirdos versus everyone on the respectable side. We are seeing, as far, I continue to point this out, we are seeing far, far more respectable people stand up and fight against this than so far what they've trotted in front of you. Save for, and I only say save for these people because I know that's how they're perceived, people like Fauci and Dr. Redfield, which, by the way, I do not think that way about them. I think these people are very deceitful, but they're perceived as the experts. But outside of those key token main, you know, key points in their key positions, the vast, you know, people that are not connected to the government, scientists and medical professionals are out there screaming about how we're being lied to. People like Hodgkinson and Lord Sumption and people out there that are saying this is not true. In this case, he's not saying that. He's saying that we're, regardless, what they're doing is wrong. And we all know that. At some core level, we all know that. They cannot just stand up and say, we're declaring Christmas no longer allowed. You cannot go out after this. That has never, ever been where we were. And they suddenly pushed this in with breakneck speed after this happened as if it was planned. Here in de Blasio is unleashing his COVID checkpoints, you know, because freedom to catch and fine you if you travel on the holiday. As millions of Americans defy the CDC's warning not to travel for the holiday season, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio has once again dispatched police to key traffic choke points, whereas quarantine rules will be strictly enforced. Great. So is that keeping you safe? Right? Is that keeping people safe, or is that just waiting on the sidelines, you know, to catch you without wearing your seatbelt? Right? Ooh, got ya. Is it about keeping you safe, or is it about enforcing the rules that they have mandated that aren't actually legal? Is it about making sure that you're doing what you're told? That's what this is about. Right? As I think the singer, rapper that I've talked to in the past, good guy, he tweeted out saying, this doesn't make sense, which I agree with. That, okay, so we're allowed to go into big crowded stores as long as we have a mask on, but we can't go in a room full of our family at all? Like, why? The reason that they do that is because they don't want you sitting down around the dinner table and talking about what a horrible situation we're in. And I think that makes sense. In any case, it's not logical. But here they're going to put up enforcement. They're going to put up checkpoints that are going to stop you for no reason, because they think you might be breaking quarantine. That is straight up authoritarian. You're not breaking any laws. By the way, they're not allowed to do that. But now that we're in a state of emergency and because COVID, well, now all rules are off and your constitutional rights are on pause. Didn't you know? Even though that's not allowed to happen. I mean, really think about it. What do you think is going to happen? How would they know you're breaking quarantine unless they're either tracking your phone or they're just stopping everybody? In any case, this is the world you're allowing everybody out there, allowing this. This is the world authoritarian, technocratic control, biosecurity state that you're allowing to come into pass, and you're pretending like it's going to go away tomorrow. You said after 15 days, you said after 1 month, you said after 3 months, you said after we get a vaccine, now it's going to go on way past that, as they're all telling us, and all you can do is nod and go, it's for your safety, just wear a mask. New York statewide 14-day holiday quarantine mandates the travelers quarantine or take a test showing they're negative. So now you're being forced to take a test if you want to go see your family for Christmas. You know how gross that is? Like, how, what a violation of your personal rights that is? Of course, the arguments from the bootlickers out there are going to, well, just take a test. What are you whining about? It's for everyone's safety. It doesn't matter. You don't get to decide what is and is not important for other people. You don't get to sit there with your smug attitude that makes you think you're right about everything because the media said you were, and act like you get to decide why I feel a test is not what I should be forced to do. It's my body, my DNA. I have a right. It doesn't matter that you minimize it and think it doesn't make sense. Oh, just wear a mask. It's not harming anybody. Yeah, but it really is. Regardless of any of that, though, it's not your right to pretend like I should not think it's important. Or like it's like that I don't have the right to decide that those things mean more to me than they do to you. That's what freedom is called. But see, clearly they don't believe in freedom or they wouldn't be fighting for this stuff. They believe in the nanny dad, the mommy, daddy, nanny government that's telling you what's right and safe. And if you don't listen to them, well, you should have listened better. $1,000 or $2,000, according to the mayor's office. If you violate this thing, again, ask yourself how in the world they would know that. It's just really sickening, guys. Here's Mark D. Levine saying, lines for COVID tests in New York City were breaking records now. Oh, I wonder why. I wonder why they were breaking records for testing. Oh, that's right, because they coerced them into doing it. Because just like you're going to be coerced into getting the vaccine so you can travel, that's what they're testing now. So now we're seeing, remember we saw those pictures of lines around the like going for miles in where I think it was Texas or in New York as well for the testing. And people are going, why are they doing that? Well, here is the answer. Because they said you're not allowed to see your family unless you get a test and prove to us that you did it. How much you want to bet that those tests aren't free? That's pretty, I think that's even, like in regard to a workplace, they can't force you to wear something and then make you pay for it. Interesting how I always relate to my past work in restaurants, but that's the point. They're saying here's the test that you have to take and then probably making money off of it. That's just a guess. Sure, there's probably different variations in different states, but at the end of the day, they're forcing you to take a test so you can see your family. How is that any different than forcing you to get a vaccine so you can see your family or go on a plane or go in a restaurant, which is what all of this is about? All of these guys are saying that is what is coming. So we have these lines around the block, 7 hours of a wait. He said, this is an alarming sign that huge numbers of New Yorkers are getting tested ahead of holiday travel. Remember, a negative test does not mean you can stop taking precautions. Really? Isn't that great? Oh, let's understand what he has to say here. Okay, so a negative coronavirus test does not mean you can safely travel, socialize. So you get a test and it says that you don't have it. And they're going, well, that doesn't mean you don't have it. So does that mean that there are false positives? No, fake news. Fake news we'll hear. But let's read through their logic here. Really, you're going to see their intentional omission of the other side of this story. Many people consider a negative coronavirus test to be a ticket to freely socialize without precautions. But scientists and doctors say this is dangerously misguided. It is one precautionary measure, but does not negate the need for others like quarantining, masking, and distancing. So what in the hell? If you get a test, of course, basically break it down right off the bat. That means the tests do not mean what they think, what they're telling you that it means. If the test you get tested for, if you get tested and it tells that you don't have it, if we're taking, let's say, a blood sample, well, that would be more specific. But because we're doing tests that don't actually really test you and it's really a broad guessing game, well, that's why that's happening. With a test with potentially 90% false positives or 30%, according to the CDC, that is what they're talking about. They're saying, well, they don't want to say that, but it's like, well, it might not be efficient. It might not be accurate. So you're going to have to continue to social distance, quarantine, and mask. So why even get the test? And if you are going to continue to quarantine, mask, and distance, why can you not go see your family? Like, do you see the point? None of that makes any sense. So you're getting a test that doesn't actually mean that you're not sick, but getting that test that doesn't mean you're not sick then suddenly allows you to go to your family's house. Ever since this has begun, this is completely arbitrary. All of these random things, which are different from state to state, which also doesn't make any sense, because which one's safe and which ones aren't, who cares? It's a free-for-all. It's a wild west of government mandates and authoritarian actions. It says the main reason is that a test gives information about the level of virus at one point in time. Well, this test does, yeah. A person could be infected but not have enough virus yet for the register on a test. Which is weirdly the exact opposite of what a PCR test is talking about, right? Getting down to a very, very small example of it. It says, or a person may become infected in the hours or days after taking the test. Also, the test do not have 100% accuracy. I love that. That's the last part, right? and they're just not accurate at all. But the point in that is that they're going to get into here talking about why that means that you could still be sick. But of course, actively avoid the part that means that you could also get false positives. Because that is dishonest reporting. It says, if you require all of your guests to email you a negative test result before your Thanksgiving dinner, it will definitely decrease the risk of an outbreak, but not completely. So now we're asking family members and guests to give them their personal medical information about something. I mean, this is exactly what we were warning you about. Your medical history and your personal medical information, right down to your DNA and other issues you may have, is becoming the government's property. And now they're basically telling you that you need to freely open that up to people and let them know this is a violation of your constitutional and your human rights. Just exactly like we told you in the UNESCO document called about the bioethics and human rights. Right here. Universal Declaration on Bioethics and Human Rights, October 19, 2005. Right? Since I brought it up, I'll show you the main points right here. Okay? Most important. The interest and welfare of the individual should have priority over the sole interest of science or society. That is in under Article 3, human dignity and human rights. Don't forget, the United States government signed this declaration on 2005, meaning that this is an acknowledgement of international law that they are now violating. Who cares? Regardless, it doesn't matter if you want to say it's because you're endangered for your safety. It's for everyone's best interest. You don't just get to add caveats to things that you agree to, especially international law. It's the same reason as saying, well, you know, here's your constitutional rights, except now we're in danger, so they're on hold. That does not happen. Or, I mean, it's happening. It does not. The point is, at the end of the day, it's not. Those rights don't just disappear. They're there. They're just not respecting them. That's the point. But here it is very clearly, the U.S. government acknowledged and signed and went forward that your individual rights have priority over the whole. That's what it says right there. Interest and welfare of you has priority over the sole interest of them and society. But I guess they just don't care about that, which shows you that when they sign these things, their word means absolutely nothing. But it also shows you very clearly the consent, meaning your ability to say yes, you want it, or no, you don't, should, where appropriate, be expressed and may be withdrawn by the person concerned at any time and for any reason without disadvantage or prejudice. So the exact opposite of what's happening right now. And then it also says, again, for the second time in three paragraphs, because they really want to make sure you see it, consent may be withdrawn by the person concerned at any time for any reason without disadvantage or prejudice. But no, not according to your government. Not according to the people that we're dealing with right now who are telling you that's not the case. Now you have to get tested. And this is where the testing, first of all, we're not even at the vaccine yet. And we're already seeing the breakdown of your rights. It says the experts agree that tests were very useful for one thing. If someone receives a positive test, that person knows to stay home and isolate. Didn't you just tell us they're not accurate and that there's a lot of misinformation coming from these things? But of course, it only applies to getting false negatives. It's just baffling to me how people cannot see how dishonest they are. A test filters out those who are positive and definitely shouldn't be there, she said. How is it that it can be absolutely beyond reproach for positive tests, but when they're negative, well, that doesn't mean you're not actually sick. That is just straight up dishonest. And don't forget, this actual publication is where they wrote the discussion about these tests. That your test positive, well, it may not mean the idea that there are absolutely, but don't, the CDC's website says right now 30%. And that's obviously not correct, because people that have been using these are speaking out about it and saying it's a joke. These things should not be used for this purpose. As I just reported the other day, the pandemic that wasn't, or the epidemic that wasn't. Well, that's why. I can't type right now. Let's see. I should bring it up so I can not forget to include it in the show notes. This is, if you haven't seen, I'm going to put this up in the other show that I did. I'm not going to go over it again today, but this is an example of how in the New York Times reporting about it. So think about how dumb it is. The New York Times is reporting about this in 2007, exactly that the PCR test is wildly ripe for false positives. And in fact, it actually led to a fake pandemic, a fake epidemic, where they said there's a whooping cough epidemic that went on for 8 months. 4,000 people were involved. And then it came out later that it was all wrong. Why? Because the PCR test was false positives. That's not a joke. And it actually discusses how this is a huge problem. And it's happening far more than we understand. And we need to do something about it now. And then did absolutely nothing about it. And are now, in fact, using that abuse to pretend like we're living it now. But this is the pandemic that wasn't. This is what we're living right now. Think about how crazy that is. Now, please either watch the show I did on this before or read this entire thing. It will blow your mind. The PCR test is exactly what we're talking about. At Dartmouth, the decision to use the PCR test And that's what happened. It didn't happen. I mean, just in case you think I'm wrong, it was the start of a bizarre episode. It was the story of an epidemic that wasn't. They used the test. They thought because, well, they've got symptoms and the test is saying they're sick, well, they must have a whooping cough because that's what we think. 8 months go by until they finally admit that it was all wrong. Everybody was giving vaccines and being taken antibiotics and they didn't need any of it. It's incredible that we can be here where they're pretending like false positives are not even on the table. If you get a false positive, well, you know that you have to stay home and isolate. That's what they're saying. The test filters out those who are positive and definitely shouldn't be there. Testing negative basically changes nothing about your behavior. It still means to wear a mask, distance, and avoid indoor. It doesn't make any. The point is, guys, this is what they want you to do regardless. They need you to wear a mask, distance yourself, stay inside, listen to what you're told, and just allow them to build their new future, their new normal, begin the great reset. That's what they want you to do. Be quiet, passive, and allow what they're trying to do. It has nothing to do with the test or whatever else we're dealing with right now. It says laboratory tests that rely on a technique called polymerase chain reaction, or PCR, can detect the virus when it's present, even at very low levels. But didn't they just say, it doesn't matter. Don't try to make sense of what they're saying, but it might take a couple of days to return results, leaving time for someone to be exposed. Antigen tests are faster, less expensive, and more convenient. They can deliver results in a matter of minutes, but are also more prone to missing the virus when it's scarce. Oh, and I guess they just forgot to include the fact that they're very, very prone to false positives. Rapid testing is less accurate than the government wants to admit. Rapid antigen testing is a mess. The federal government pushed it out without a plan and then spent weeks denying problems with false positives. I went over this one too. We'll just pretend like they're just not good at their journalism job. But clearly, they don't care about informing you about the full picture. And at the end of the day, PCR tests, as they know from their past reporting, is rife with problems. And so is the antigen test that they're now telling you is the way to go as well. But it's prone to missing the virus. Oh, so it's prone to, again, false negatives, but not false positives, despite the truth. Oh, you thought I was lying? Nah, that's right there on the FDA website. Potential for false positive results with the antigen test. But I guess the New York Times just missed that one. But realize, guys, that there at some level, there are people that are resisting this. Every sheriff in LA region in this area refuses to enforce Gavin Newsom's COVID curfew. What we need is more people like this. More people that are willing to stand up for the uncomfortable truth. Put themselves in harm's way in order to fight for your freedom, right? That is real courage. Now, as I always point out, there are plenty of people that join the military under the false pretense that that's what they're doing. They're being fooled. What they're fighting for is control, profit, overthrowing countries and destroying lives, and naming that freedom. And that's not because that's what Americans want. That's because what our fraudulent, corrupt government has been doing in our name for a long time. And they're lying to us about it being good. Why? Because Americans want good things. Because inherently, predominantly, we're good people who want to be kind and spread and help people that need help and do, right? That's what Americans want. Otherwise, our government wouldn't lie to us about what we're doing. Right? They want us to feel that they're good because we want good. Realize that. So what we need is more people like these people, these sheriffs that are willing to put their jobs on the line to fight for what they know is right. Because they remember their oath to the Constitution wasn't just some passing thing they said to get the job. But we're seeing in other cases, pupils and staff in all of Welsh secondary schools and colleges now told to wear masks in all areas outside of the classroom. And on transport. So not only inside, but anywhere outside as well. Right. Oh, by the way, I won't rehash it, but please take time to watch this one I just did, The Great Mask Deception. And I go over a lot of information. If you still believe what they're telling you about these masks, then you just haven't looked at the information. I mean, it's really that simple. And even more experts are coming out and continuing to tell you that it's never been this case. It's never been the case that these were ever thought to draw to in any way block transmission of viruses. That's never even been the pretend pretense. Suddenly COVID-19. And they all start off by saying, no, that's not what they're for. But then weirdly switch over. And now we're supposed to pretend like that never happened. But as we force children to wear them in cases where they shouldn't, especially when the vast majority of the population is way, way under 1% death rate, right? Once you get under about 30, 40, it's basically zero. Right now, children are listed as zero on CDC's website. But sure, let's force them to wear masks because of the off chance of some undefined asymptomatic idea that nobody has ever really proven, especially in children. When I say that, be clear what we're talking about here. There are people that can be asymptomatic in any case, but we're talking about people that have that they're told asymptomatic based on a test that's got false positives. Like that basketball player in the very beginning that got it, and he was like, I still could play. I can play 7 games right now. I feel fine. Because he was told he was sick and he didn't really have it. That was pretty damn clear. And we're now seeing that case. But nobody wants to address the reality. All the information is there for you. But the larger point, going back to the lockdowns here, Qantas Airline is mandating COVID-19 vaccines for international flights. Oh, that fake news story that was never going to happen, so stop lying about it, Ryan. Yeah, that's right here in front of you. Right? Every single time this is happening. And now, those people that said we were conspiracy theorists for saying this would happen, well, now they're going to have a different thing to say and be like, they're not going to make you do domestic flights. You're such a liar. That's only about this because of the, I just saw somebody say this too. When I take overseas flights, I have to take vaccines for all kinds of things. What are you freaking out about? I can't even wrap my mind around the ignorance that it was such a statement. Are you really pretending that you don't know that there's a difference between choosing to go somewhere and then choosing to take a vaccine that they tell you will keep you safe from some kind of disease, which in no part of that are they forcing you to take it, right? And then an idea that you're choosing to fly overseas in this case, but it's also going to be domestic as we'll show you, and then them saying you're not allowed to unless you take this vaccine. And in this case, it's a vaccine. It's for something that has, it's not about something that you, I mean, look, at the end of the day, it's always your choice. Informed consent matters. Now, look, if you're going for a job, you work for a company, then they're sending you to Africa for something, and they could say, well, you have to take this vaccine because of liability or whatever. By the way, at a past show, I constantly kept mixing up immunity and liability, and I know that. I just can't comment on YouTube anymore when it's happening, but it's obviously we're talking about immunity to liability. Right? Not that they have life. The point is all these vaccine companies are immune from liability now, just like all the past ones. But we can see how this is marching forward. Well, back to the point. So I don't miss that. If your job tells you to do it, there's a difference there because they're in a situation where their insurance company says they have to because we don't want to be irresponsible, blah, 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 blah. And that's what those people are saying. But if you just choose to go somewhere on your own accord, you don't have to take anything. You may end up getting sick because you didn't take some kind of whatever thing for some kind of tropical area you're in. But at the end of the day, it's your choice. And now they're saying that you have to because your safety from something that's basically not putting you at risk at all, unless you're over 70 and in a nursing home, is how it seems. But this was fake news. As I said, we're told this is a crazy conspiracy theory, though. This is what's called societal and financial exclusion. Whether mandatory or not, you will be forced to take it if you want to engage with society or the monetary system. And to be clear, this is what it says right here. Passengers will be required to prove vaccination for COVID-19 before boarding international flights and potentially domestic flights as well. I'll leave this in there. You can watch it for yourself. Do we really think that's not going to happen? Don't forget that the other airline lobbies and numerous other entities have already said that is going to happen once this comes to pass. And again, don't forget that we just told you that we are already seeing the lines for these testing going around the block. 7-hour wait line for these testings, even though they didn't want to do it. Right? Those lines weren't there before they said you had to get it, unless if you wanted to see your family. Suddenly they coerced you into doing it, and a lot of people just went along with it, which I disagree with, but you understand why they might do so. So here we are again with the same scenario where they're creating the justification and they're going to create the situation. But as Aileen pointed out, hiring PR firms to persuade people to take a life-saving vaccine for a virus with a 99% survival rate is a red flag. And I happen to agree with that. Read more closely. The messaging will be that the vaccine is your ticket back to freedom. That's dangerous messaging. And that we know is what they're trying to say, even though they're the ones that took your freedom away from you. If you feel like you actually had it entirely to begin with. But the point is, they took away things that you did and have a right to do. Not COVID-19, your government did. And now as we continue to see that the death rate's not there and that the predictions they gave us are not there and the tests are using false positive, which are hyping up the numbers, and they're hiding the hospitalizations, and they're combining pneumonia with flu with COVID-19, and we can see how they're obviously building this whole thing. And then telling you it's for your safety, and then telling you that they're trying to, I mean, they're actually talking about paying people to take this thing. It's crazy. But on the note of surveillance and the technocratic future, I just wanted to include this. This guy's saying his landlord wants to install these. And I've seen, I know of this happening already. It's mandatory, he says. I don't want it. I talk to myself. He's being facetious, but this is what it says. But on top of keeping your family safe, it comes with a built-in Alexa assistant. Can you speak to the smoke alarm and get the weather, play music, and set timers? So local, apartment buildings, all kinds of things, maybe restaurants or any other places are going to be including these. Probably not restaurants because of many reasons, but now you're going to have artificial intelligence, Google, Amazon assistants that are basically spying on you for the CIA. Now, you may, if you actually balk when I said that, I feel bad for you. Like, it's so funny how people still think those things are fake, how even as we're watching things like the NSA and the spying programs and all these things, and then the contact tracing. I mean, they're openly doing it today. So if you don't believe that they're constantly listening to everything and keeping all kinds of record, I mean, just wake up. But there's a huge portion of this country that are forced to live in things like this, in apartments or, you know, whatever kind of things, even though they might not want to, because of the way that this world is being driven into extreme divides, where you've got the 0.0001% and everybody else. It's just incredible how they're obviously building this out. And here's the actual website if you want to take a look at it. Google Nest Protect. Creepy. That it's forced is very creepy. Why would you want that? Because understand that that means the people in charge of that place can actually use that to spy on you. COVID-19 immunity may last up to 6 months. Well, don't forget that it won't be forever anyway. Even though this is not immunity, even though they're lying to you about what that means, study of the experience worldwide found that after injection, immunity is sustained for at least 2 months. So they're using immunity. We just went over this. It in no way, not even close, and it's publicly stated right on the Pfizer information that it is not keep making you immune in any way from the virus. It is not stopping you from getting it. It is not removing it from your body if you have it. It is lessening symptoms, which means you can still spread it, which means people can still catch it. That is ridiculous. But here is this website flat out misrepresenting that fact to you. Why? Because they need you to think this is what's happening. It says right here that... Based on its research, it may not be possible for a COVID-19 vaccine to provide long-term immunity, and a booster may be needed, or, you know, not at all, since they didn't even try that. Again, that was listed right in the documentation. Forbes documented it as well. They did not even set out to intend to try to stop it. They set out to intend to lessen the symptoms. That was what it said months before they even came out with this. She said, it's not that surprising, as immunity does not wane over time. God, it's so gross how people are willingly misrepresenting everything. But the point, guys, is even though they're pretending it's immunity, which, by the way, immunity means immunity, but it's only going to be 6 months, meaning you're going to have to take the vaccine again and tough out those horrible, hard side effects that last for a few days again, for two shots again, and then maybe get monitored again. Understand that if you're getting monitored pharmacovigilance for up to 24 months, that means that you're potentially getting four sets of vaccines throughout this whole process. It's just, this is incredible. The vaccine will not end what this is. Anybody still believing that? Anybody still trying to say that? Just give us the vaccine and we get to go back to normal. Every single thing they're saying now is telling you that's not happening. And then to finish up, don't forget, as I pointed out the other day, somebody sent me this and I just figured I'd include it straight from Johns Hopkins Medicine. Studies suggest that medical error is now third leading cause of death. So as we're in a position with this very experimental, wildly untested, never before succeeded RNA genetically manipulating or DNA genetically manipulating, all the things they're doing, all these things they've been never succeeding on, that they're now rushing out for your safety and testing it in your body. Don't forget that on top of all of that, already in this country, those kind of treatments are the third leading cause of death. No, not just vaccines, but medical treatments of any kind are the third leading cause of death in the United States. Does that sound like that makes sense with how we project ourselves with all the technology and the advancements and everything? Oh, they try to say it's because of per capita and all the blah, blah. Well, there's plenty of places with far more people, and it does not make sense. What it does show you is that there is negligence, there's malfeasance, there's a lack of concern for what actually happens to you, despite that being their constant statement. Because those vaccines that aren't being tested, those will help add to this number. So will all of the other things where medical treatments are actually about profit as opposed to keeping you safe, such as, I don't know, chemotherapy that's got a combined success rate of about 3%, one of the only classifications of pharmaceutical drugs where the doctor gets a direct cut of the profit. Yeah, that sounds like it's real honest, doesn't it? Look any of it up, guys. That's why medical errors are the third leading cause of death. How much you want to bet after this whole process, it goes up a notch. But of course, because I'm creating vaccine hesitancy, despite the fact that it's every reason in the world to be hesitant about this vaccine, well, then I'm a bad guy, because who cares about the truth? Incredible. Absolutely incredible. But thank you for being here today. Thank you for joining me. And I hope this information gets out as far as it possibly can. And I will try to get that PCR test part out tomorrow, because that's a very important one, as well as the voting machine and all the other stuff. But as always, I'm just one guy back here. But you got some more stuff coming from Robert Inlakesh, from Derek Bros, from Whitney Webb in the future. We've got plenty more coming your way. And we will continue to be objective and honest about the way this goes forward, whether it is Biden the puppet or Trump the puppet or anybody else in place. We'll continue to report the facts about what's going on, not the partisan perspective of what's going on. And hopefully that's why you're here. I love you all. Thank you for being here. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
400 parts per million. So the dangerous levels, the OSHA standards in America say that as an employee, or if you're in a room, if it is above 2,000 parts per million carbon dioxide, it's a toxic and dangerous environment. And as an employer, you can actually be held to account for working. You are not allowed to work in it. And when you wear the mask for more than a minute, you are breathing in more than 5,000, almost 8,000 parts per million. And actually on the space shuttle and on nuclear submarines, once they reach a level of over 5,000 parts per million, it has to actually come up, because it's actually a life-threatening and dangerous environment.
Yeah.
So within a minute, the masks are exposing people who wear them, including children and everybody, to a toxic environment that actually holds the employers. You know, if you're a waitress or anyone working, or if you are forced to wear a mask in a shop, and you know, people, we need high amounts of oxygen. You can die within minutes. So why we have been looking at notice of liability is that anyone, a principal or a teacher or an employer, they are actually putting your life at risk. And so what we're saying is, the individual person, when they are doing something that actually causes more harm than good, they are actually themselves personally liable. So the business, the employer, the individual teacher, the principal, if a child dies, so we know there has been two deaths of 14-year-olds in Germany. So a precedence case would be for the teacher and the principal to be held to account for contributing to that death. And these are the kind of actions that we want to take, because they are causing serious harm to these children and to people. And so I would say the masks, you know, are actually causing serious harm to people, and they should be stopped immediately.